Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Welcome into another edition of the podcast, which is supposed to be daily, but sometimes isn't. Yeah, I've been gone. I had a day yesterday and life got weird, and it's just, you know, how things go. It's funny, I had a session cancel on Tuesday, which I thought was going to interfere with things, but didn't. And that left me open to do a bunch of things, which I got done, and I was happy about that. And then I had another session, which was booked for yesterday morning, and then other things happened on top of that, and eventually the whole day got crazy. So I think I finally got in. I got out of the studio and out of running back and forth across the world, close to five or so. Yeah, about normal quitting time. So it was a pretty big day yesterday. I got a lot done, and I'm thankful for that. So let's see, what else have we had? An interesting, had a really, really, really good podcast session over at Dawson Now, and that one drops next Tuesday. And let me tell you something, if you know who Scott Dawson is, even if you don't, you need to check the podcast out. It's a good podcast. And next Tuesday is an old friend, someone I've known for quite some time from radio days and otherwise. And I'm not going to drop, well, so many people who listen will not know who this is, but in my area, he's fairly well known. And the band that he was in was known really all up and down the eastern side of the United States. And he was a keyboard player for a band called Telluride. And this was back in the 90s or so. And he did a lot of traveling, did a lot of drinking. They made a lot of money and spent every bit of it at the bar, you know, that sort of a thing. And he has a very, very interesting and compelling story. And that was what we talked about yesterday, as we recorded Dawson Now. And there was a point I'm sitting in the control room. I'm sitting in going, okay, I'm wiping my eyes. You can stop now. Okay. It was a really good one. So I suggest, if you haven't listened yet, start with that one. Start with that one. The one next Tuesday. It's a good one. My old friend Kevin Derryberry is on the show. It's going to be good. So that's what I was doing yesterday, among other things, because I got through there and then came back and edited down the one that dropped yesterday. And then today I've got to do the editing and processing on the one that'll drop next Tuesday. And what else was there? Oh yeah, there was other things, errands and the like that consumed the day. But back in the studio again today for another podcast. And it's funny because I was reading up on what's been happening in Minneapolis, and the time got away from me. So as we've been as the intro music was playing, I was scrambling to hook up things that have not been hooked up because I've got things sitting here that needed to be connected that I just didn't get connected yet. One of those things being
Bueller.
Yeah. The iPad that plays my silliness, that one, I had to get that hooked up. And I looked up at the clock and it's 1 minute till. And so I start scrambling and get everything all hooked up and ready to roll. But as I said, I was looking at the news. I've been following this thing with the riots in Minneapolis, and maybe it's not just me. I hope it's not. But when you think of Minneapolis, Minnesota, you don't think of things like this, do you? You just don't think about Minneapolis, Minnesota being a center of racial tension. You just don't. Other places, yes, but not Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's just kind of odd. And it's been a bizarre situation. And I really, what started it all was the way the police managed or mismanaged the arrest of George Floyd and how he died. I am not going to comment on that because I, along with everyone else, do not know what really happened. At this point, we don't know what actually happened. We can make assumptions, and assumptions are always dangerous. Until you actually have the facts in hand, you don't know what actually happened. So, am I siding with the cops? No, I'm not. Am I siding with George Floyd? I am not. I'm not taking a side. I'm not making a judgment. I'm not making a statement on the issue, because all that would be is speculation. There's plenty to talk about that is not speculation. There's plenty to talk about that is absolute fact, truth, and known. But what actually happened in that situation, which caused the police to put George Floyd on the ground the way he was, what actually happened? Even though what happened, we do know that what we have seen in the video, a police officer with his knee on the neck of somebody in custody, we know that is not proper police procedure. We know they are taught not to do that, and we know that that was done. That's all we know. We know the man was arrested. We know that he was a criminal. We know that he had prior contact and stuff going on with the cops. He was a known factor in crime in that area. We know that. We also know he is now dead. What we don't know is the full story of actually why or how. All we have is speculation. But speculation is enough. Speculation is enough for the community organizers, the race baiters, and the progressive side of our society to take advantage and to create and disrupt society, disruption of society. We know that's happening. Let me get into a story here first that's on the Daily Wire by Ryan Saavedra. It says, Minneapolis burned Wednesday night after riots over the death of George Floyd, who died in police custody earlier this week. As I say, that's all we know. He died in police custody. We know nothing else but that fact, to be absolutely sure. Spun out of control, turned violent. The Star Tribune reported that most of the violence came from a massive crowd that was rioting outside Minneapolis's 3rd Precinct Police Headquarters, who were throwing objects at the building and officers and turning more violent as the night wore on. The AutoZone auto parts store across from the 3rd Precinct was set on fire. As some protesters tried to extinguish the fire, others danced gleefully in front of the flames and smoke, snapping selfies. At the nearby Lake Street Target store, looters were seen leaving with items ranging from large TVs to clothing to groceries. By the way, I've seen the photos of the inside of that store. It's been almost stripped bare. Looting also occurred at Minnehaha Lake Wine and Spirits, at Hiawatha and Lake, and many other businesses in the area. A liquor store. Liz Sawyer, a reporter with the Star Tribune, said that all the windows in a strip mall were shattered and people were stealing products from those stores. She adds, many of the shops destroyed along this stretch of Lake Street are immigrant-owned businesses, many of which were already struggling during the pandemic. Now it's worse, said Roberto Hernandez, who stood out a guard outside of his nutrition store for 5 hours to protect it from looters. CBS Minnesota reported that the crowd of violent rioters measured in the hundreds and were eventually met by police officers in riot gear who deployed tear gas and rubber bullets in an attempt to disperse the mob. Can I ask why that was an eventual occurrence? Why did the police eventually meet the rioters in riot gear and deploy tear gas and rubber bullets? Why was that eventual? Why weren't these people ready immediately to push these criminals back? Why? Why not? A video journalist with the Star Tribune took a photograph of what he described as an apartment building under construction moments before the building was set ablaze. Libor Jani, a reporter for the Star Tribune, noted an incident he says was heard on a police scanner. He tweets, scanner, a newish silver SUV driving about 50 miles an hour almost hit about 10 officers. The driver may have flashed a handgun at officers. President Donald Trump weighed in on the matter before the riots descended into total chaos, saying that he has ordered federal officials to quickly investigate Floyd's death. Quote, at my request, the FBI and the Department of Justice are already well into an investigation as to the very sad and tragic death in Minnesota of George Floyd. I've asked for this investigation to be expedited and greatly appreciate all of the work done by local law enforcement. My heart goes out to George's family and friends. Justice will be served. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz warned residents on Twitter, quote, the situation near Lake Street and Hiawatha in Minneapolis has evolved into an extremely dangerous situation. For everyone's safety, please leave the area and allow firefighters and paramedics to get to the scene. And, of course, they're not going to do that. They're going to dance in front of the flames, take selfies, raid a liquor store, steal big-screen TVs, and anything they can carry out of the Target. Because that's how you respond to an injustice, is you become a criminal. Or you show everyone that you're a criminal. You already were, apparently. It's a sad situation. It really is. It's a ridiculous situation. Ice Cube, the rapper, has weighed in. He wondered aloud on Twitter how long people will tolerate police killing black Americans until they strike back. He actually tweeted that. How long will we go for blue-on-black crime before we strike back? Anybody coming at me for what I said ain't ready to do bleep, he later adds. He's been outspoken about police brutality for several decades. In 2015, he told Billboard that good cops need to end their no-snitch policy on bad cops. Quote, I think it's the same. What we got to do is hold these dudes more accountable. We need body cameras on all these cops, and we need it to be a federal offense if they tamper with those cameras, manipulate those cameras in any kind of way, or obstruct those cameras. And we need these good cops to start snitching on these bad cops. They talk bleep about our neighborhoods for having a no-snitch policy, but they have a no-snitch policy in their department, and that's the problem. The good cops need to point out these bad cops, get them out of here, and get your dignity and respect back from the community. Well, Mr. Cube, let me just say this. When your community stops behaving in a criminal manner, when they stop dealing drugs on every street corner, when they stop enslaving young people to crack and crystal meth and other drugs, when they stop shooting each other and killing each other in the streets, maybe we can make some other steps. I would say clean up your own neighborhood. And odds are everything else will get solved. It's a horrible situation. Another situation in the second day of protests in Minneapolis over the death of a black man, Mr. George Floyd. It erupted into looting and vandalism. A man who appeared to be a Trump supporter was beaten by activists. Reporter Karen Scullin of KMSP Television was at the scene of the demonstration for several hours yesterday and live tweeted what she was witnessing. She noticed that the crowd continued to build throughout the day despite the official protest not starting until 5 p.m. Scullin wrote that protesters were trying to break into the Minneapolis Police Department's third precinct and officers fired rubber bullets in an attempt to push back the crowd, which she described at the time to be not huge but very vocal and angry. The reporter noted during the afternoon, emotions high, mad dads calling for a peaceful protest, another group staring down police. All is calm right now, but within an hour, she tweeted, getting bad out here. Third precinct is being destroyed. I don't know if you've seen the photos and videos, but these people destroyed the front of that building. It looked like a scene from the Middle East, actually, where rioters destroyed a U.S. embassy a few years ago. And some of our people died. That's what it looked like. Scullin included footage of looting and acts of vandalism before reporting, quote, protesters destroying a car that says Trump on it, driver out walking around. After taking a few punches, he was helped to his smashed up vehicle and drove off with people still throwing things. This behavior is inexcusable. As I said, if these people who are screaming about being mistreated, a lone person, a criminal being mistreated, and please don't get me wrong, his death is tragic. It shouldn't have happened. But the bigger picture is this. The picture is getting bigger because of the criminal behavior of the people in response to this one incident. And that is what I'll talk about briefly next. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, the 28th day of May, 2020. We're talking about what's happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Much like what happened in Baltimore, Maryland, and other places. When a criminal was taken down by police, the community erupts. And of course, we're subjected to, on every, without exception, every news network, the statements of the family talking about what a good person the criminal was, and the endless speculation about what happened. And this is, as I said earlier, why I won't comment on what happened, because we don't know. The only people who know are those police officers who were fired. Those are the only people who know what actually happened. And for us to speculate and to take a side and to get emotional about this situation is, at the very best, premature. I think it's a grave mistake because we, as I keep saying, do not know what actually happened. I sent to my wife as I was watching the video, honestly, video with the sound down, just watching people. I do this a lot, by the way. I watch actual action, behavior, visual cues, the way someone moves. And I watched a man in custody, in handcuffs, who was very verbal. He was talking a lot. Even when he was on the ground, he was apparently resisting. So the only assumption I can make from this is that in some way there was resistance. It was mishandled. It was wrong. But then that's speculation. And as I've said, I'm really not going to engage in that. Okay? Minneapolis residents are rioting, looting, burning businesses down. Because, of course, the answer to any perceived injustice should be to engage in criminal behavior. Theft of televisions and many other items from a Target store. Like I said, go look. There's video online. There's pictures. People who have gone in with their cell phones. And this is what gets me. These people, with their cell phones, shooting video of criminal activity, which they, of course, are involved in, and posting it on social media for the public to see, you don't have to be a very bright individual to realize that they're going to find you and they're going to prosecute you for being, for the very least, for being on private property, trespassing, after the doors were locked, after business was closed for the day, you were inside their store. And the only thing that is criminal. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that is a stupid, stupid thing to do. But it happens every time something like this goes on. People post video and photos. They click selfies of themselves in front of a burning building and post them to their social media. You might as well go to the police department and show them the pictures on your phone and say, "Hey, look what I did." And then expect to be able to walk away. Those people at the Target store even tried to break into cash registers. Did you know that? They tried to break into cash registers. You know what this says to me? Is those people have never actually had a real job in their lives, especially in retail. Because at the end of every shift, actually, at the end of your shift, and someone is stepping in to take over your register, you pull the drawer, you take it to a little room, you count everything out, and you settle that drawer up for the day. And when the store is closed, the registers are empty. But people who've never had a real job and just live off of the government checks they receive every month don't know that. They raided a liquor store. A liquor store. Because, of course, the answer to anybody, any social injustice, is to get raging drunk. They burned an auto zone down. They just burned private property to the ground. Did the owner-operator of that particular auto zone cross somebody the wrong way in the hood? Did he? I would say they probably did. Add to that the fact that it was right across from the police precinct they were destroying at the time. And many other criminal acts, including the beating of somebody who just happened to be a supporter of the current president of the United States. Nothing we're seeing on the news, none of this behavior, is protected by the Constitution. Oh, but it's a protest. No. When it crosses the line into criminal activity, it's no longer a protest. It's crime. But all of it will be defended by the left as somehow being justified. All of it. You just keep watching. The usual suspects will be coming out from underneath their rocks. Watch Al Sharpton's show this week. Make sure you catch it. Al Sharpton will be all over this. I wouldn't be surprised at all to find out that Al Sharpton is already in Minneapolis stirring things up. If he's not, he has people there that are there stirring up the anger, making people more hot about the situation so that this just gets worse. You just watch. This is all a result of progressive government and progressive indoctrination. Progressive government fails at every effort to prove progressive policies will save the people from their oppression, because that's what progressivism is all about. Progressivism and liberalism cannot exist without a victim class. There have to be victims. So they manufacture them by lying to them and telling them they're oppressed. When they actually live in the most prosperous nation in the world with endless opportunity for success. But the liberals and the progressives tell them they're being held back, tell them they're being oppressed, and they convince them and brainwash them into believing that they are victims. And when they buy into the victimization, they negate any opportunity to succeed. They convince these people that they deserve more. More than they can earn with their own efforts. And so when something like this happens, those people take advantage and they execute revenge on their perceived oppressors. They steal their stuff and destroy their property in revenge. We see this play out every time something like this happens in America. And honestly, when you look at the overall picture, and you have to, you look at the size of the population of the United States of America. You look at the number of cities in this country, the urban areas in this country. You look at what you look at that overall, that bigger picture, and the number of incidents like this that occur, they are the exception to the rule. And honestly, they are a fairly rare exception to the rule. This doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen once a week, once a month. It doesn't even really happen once a year. The fact that it happens is not good. Please don't mistake what I'm saying for anything other than that. The loss of life is tragic. Even though this man was a criminal, even though he was known to police, even though he was engaged in criminal activity when he was arrested at the time and all of this began, it's still tragic. But in the bigger picture, this kind of incident is not at all common. It is the exception to the rule. But the progressives, the liberals, the politicians, and the rabble-rousers in their group make it seem as if this is a constant problem. But as I said earlier, I don't think this problem would exist at all if there were not criminal activity which precipitates it. I'm not excusing the death of this man, George Floyd, not by any means. What I'm saying is that if George Floyd was not engaged in criminal activity, he would still be alive today. Why do I feel like I should be wearing platform shoes? Is it just me? A big thanks to my buddy Ray Malik, who posted something on Facebook this morning. It made me laugh, and I needed a laugh. It says, today's unemployment policy reminds me of a famous sketch in Animal Crackers, the film from 1930, in which Groucho Marx, who's playing the part of Captain Spaulding, quizzes Chico, who is playing Signor Emmanuel Ravelli, on how much money his band gets paid. What do you fellas get an hour? Groucho asks. For playing, we get $10 an hour, Chico replies. And Groucho presses, I see. What do you get for not playing? For not playing, we get $12 an hour. Now for rehearsing, we make a special rate. That's $15 an hour. That's for rehearsing? And what do you get for not rehearsing? Oh, you couldn't afford it. You see, if we don't rehearse, we don't play. And if we don't play, that runs into money. And that sounds a lot like what's happening right now with people being paid not to work. Thanks, Ray. If you're not familiar with it, Ray was a sports writer in the Birmingham area for a long time. And he is on the staff with a congressman and does a lot of work around here and in Washington, D.C. Good guy. Very, very good guy. Well, the Democrats are worried, apparently, coming to us from Unbiased America and Politico. There's an eye-opening article in Politico today about a new fear developing among the Democrats. A former Obama White House official who is still close to the former president says, this is my big worry. He was asked about the level of concern among the top Democratic Party officials. He says, that level of concern is high. High, 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 high. What is it that Obama and Biden officials are so concerned about? A deadly second wave of the coronavirus? Bankruptcies and layoffs? No, the thing that's keeping Democrats up at night is the fear that the economy might recover in a big way right before the election. Jason Furman, a top economist for the Obama administration, says, we are about to see the best economic data we've seen in the history of this country. And that thought has caused some Democrats, especially the Obama alumni around Washington, to panic. Back in April, when the economy had just been shut down and unemployment was spiking, the economic carnage seemed likely to doom President Donald Trump's chances at re-election. But now, Furman and other economists are saying that the months preceding the November election could offer Trump the chance to brag truthfully about the most explosive monthly employment numbers and gross domestic product growth ever. Furman has already noticed some data that points to the kind of recovery that economists often see after a hurricane or other disaster. The rebound can be very, very fast because people go back to their original job. They get called back from furlough. You put the lights back on in your business. Given how many people were furloughed and how many businesses were closed, you can get a big jump out of that. It will look like a V. I mean, if you're looking at a graph, it sinks to the bottom and then whoosh, back up to the top again. Looks like a V. Yes, it's a rebound. But so was the famous It's Morning in America rebound that propelled Ronald Reagan to one of the biggest landslide re-elections in U.S. history. Reagan's tumultuous first term saw a severe recession followed by a sharp bounce back. Voters credited Reagan's economic policies for the rebound and for feeling good for the first time in years, and gave him an unprecedented 535-13 Electoral College re-election victory over the hapless Walter Mondale. As an aside, you have to remember that Reagan came in after Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, who up until Obama, was recognized by many to be the least effective, least capable president we've had. If the CBO forecasts are correct, the third quarter this year will see the strongest quarter in U.S. history, following the weakest in quarter two. The CBO projects annualized third quarter, that's July through September, GDP growth of 22.2%. That would be almost two times higher than the previous post-war record from back in 1950, and miles above the 3% growth rate that people these days associate with economic good times. Remember, Obama told us we'd never see 3% again. Also, interest rates will be near zero, and gas prices will be at generational lows. Unemployment, which is measured once per month, will still be bad, but will likely have improved for five straight months by the time voters go to the ballot box in November. In fact, if the current pace continues, Furman predicts that the four jobs reports before the election could be blockbusters. He says, you could easily have 1 to 2 million jobs created a month in those four reports before November. He added, then, toward the end of October, we will get GDP growth for the third quarter at an annualized rate, and it could be double-digit positive economic growth. So these will be the best jobs and growth numbers ever. According to Politico, that realization has Democrats spooked. A former Obama White House official says, even today, when we're at over 20 million unemployed, Trump gets high marks on the economy. So I can't imagine what it looks like when things go in the other direction. I don't think this is a challenge for the Biden campaign. This is the challenge for the Biden campaign. If they can't figure this out, they should all just go home. Another progressive Democrat operative pointed out that recent polling, taken during the bottom of the crisis, shows Joe Biden is struggling to best Trump on who is more trusted to handle the economy. He said, Trump beats Biden on the economy even right now. This is going to be extremely difficult no matter what. It's existential that we figure it out. Problems caused by the unique recession will remain. Many employers have gone bankrupt. Others have used the pandemic to downsize. Consumption and travel will likely remain lower. Millions of people in industries like hospitality and tourism will need to find new jobs in new industries. But that scenario will play out in the long term, well after the election. Furman said, the argument that we are in another Great Depression will look like it was overstated. Trump can say, 2 million deaths didn't happen. Great Depression didn't happen. We're making a lot of progress. Bingo. He is absolutely right on the money. He's hit the center of the target. Bullseye. They may try to make this into some huge crisis that the president is responsible for. But things are already beginning to turn. Right now, things are beginning to turn. We have hit the bottom of that V on the graph, and things are starting to go back up again. The stock market, which is a speculation on the future, is going back up. Those who invest are having more confidence. states are opening back up. Well, except for the blue states. The blue state, this is also funny because the blue states are opening up. Even California is beginning to open things up again. But they're opening things up again because the people are forcing that to happen. Not because the government wants it to happen. The governor and of California and the mayor of L.A., they have been forcing people to stay in their homes. I know you've seen this. You had to have seen this in the L.A. area, the skate park that they came in and filled up with sand so the kids couldn't skate anymore. So they just showed up with their dirt bikes and went dirt biking. Well, the other day, the skaters came out with buckets and brooms and cleaned out the skate park. They took all the sand out of it so they could get back to skating again. We're seeing people on the beaches, even though they're not allowed on the beaches. And where they are allowed on the beaches, that's a bizarre situation. Just a sidebar real quick. You can walk on the wet sand, but you can't be on the dry sand. So you can go for a walk right up next to the waves, but you can't get in the water, and you can't be on that dry sand. So how do you get to the wet sand without crossing the dry sand? This is progressive thought. But we are in recovery. Things are beginning to turn around. People on the left, the progressives, will never admit this is going to happen. They hate the fact that it is happening because they realize that it goes against the grain of all of the lies they've told. They're trying to pin all of these bad times on the president. But when you actually look around, the states that align more with the president's political philosophy, they're opening back up again and they're succeeding. They're trying to tell us that we're seeing more cases. Oh, there's going to be a second wave. But we don't see any indication of that. We could see in the fall, in the winter, maybe, as we do with the flu every year, we could see another coronavirus wave come through. But so many people have had it. They have antibodies. They're not going to be affected the same way. In fact, I've seen reports that say that since the common cold is a coronavirus, a lot of people already have certain kinds of antibodies that, excuse you, they have certain kinds of antibodies that prevent things from getting ill again. So the future is looking good. The second wave doesn't seem to have the same punch they would like it to have. And the economy, as a result of more people realizing this, is beginning to turn. And hopefully, this is my hope, hopefully we'll begin seeing more and more and more people out and about without masks. Because they realize that the mask is not effective. That the mask is a symbol of fear. And that, as someone once famously said, the only thing we really have to fear is fear itself. Things are looking good. And hopefully, they'll just get better. Does that mean the progressives will stop trying to undermine our president? Does it mean they'll stop trying to impeach him? Does it mean they'll stop trying to keep him tied up so he can't perform what he has to perform as the chief executive of our nation? No. They're going to keep trying. They're going to keep lying. They're going to keep doing what they feel like they need to do. Many times it will be unconstitutional, illegal, but they're going to keep doing it. But that's not going to stop a recovery. Not at all. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Sorry, Had my speakers up in the break. I had to walk away for a second. You heard the doorbell a moment ago. That was FedEx dropping off a package, ringing the doorbell. And I was just... we have a Ring doorbell. One day I'll tell you the story about why we have a Ring doorbell. But the app is on the iPad that I use for the silly stuff that I talked about a while ago. You know, so... the Ring doorbell app has sound activated, and I didn't think about it, so my little iPad just responded as it's supposed to by ringing the doorbell for me. And let me know somebody was at the door. Anyway, that was FedEx dropping a package off. Anyway, it is the Thursday edition of the podcast. It is the May 28th, 2020, and we've been talking about a number of things. I mentioned the activity of the progressives, the leftists, the liberals, and what they will continue to do. And we're seeing an example of that going on right now. The U.S. House of Representatives made history yesterday by conducting its first proxy vote since Congress first met in 1789. This is not a positive thing. It is historical, but not in a good way. And Republicans raised alarms over the temporary voting system implemented because of coronavirus. It came as the White House voted Wednesday afternoon, voted Wednesday afternoon, 413-1 on imposing sanctions against Chinese officials for the treatment of Uyghur Muslims in China. More than 70 House Democrats, that's about a third of the Democratic caucus, alerted the House clerk they would be absent from Washington for the roll call votes, but designated another member to vote on their behalf. No Republicans voted by proxy. You see, they all showed up for work in spite of the coronavirus. The Republicans all reported for work. We elected them to do a job, and they showed up. The unprecedented vote occurred in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic after House Democrats passed May 15th, a temporary resolution to allow absent members to still cast votes in an effort to stop the spread of the virus and protect public health. As if them not showing up for work would make that difference. New for the proxy vote arrangement was a steady stream of lawmakers standing up on the House floor and verbally announcing the names of their colleagues they're voting proxy for and how each person votes on the legislation. For example, Representative David Cicilline, a Democrat from Rhode Island, was the designated proxy voter for Representative Karen Bass, the Democrat from California. He announced on the House floor that her vote was recorded into the tally. He said, "I inform the House that Ms. Bass will vote yay." Currently, there are 431 members in the House, and 74 Democrats were there to vote by proxy. Wow, they voted by proxy. That means 17% of all members were voting remotely Wednesday in the history-making tally. Meantime, House Republicans marked the occasion by filing a lawsuit against Democrats, claiming the proxy voting plan is unconstitutional, and they argued any vote cast by proxy should never become law. Quote, "Today is a sad day that we've got to be in the position where we're bringing suit against the Speaker," says Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming. She said that earlier Wednesday before the planned vote. She goes on to say, "We're bringing suit against the Democrats in order to prevent them from pushing this proxy vote through." But House Democrats said a remote voting plan was necessary to keep Congress moving during the pandemic when members could be unable to travel to Washington due to sickness, quarantine, and stay-home orders. Health experts across the country have advised against large gatherings to stop the spread of the contagious virus that's already killed about 100,000 Americans. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said in a statement Tuesday night, ripping the lawsuit as a sad stunt, she said the House made its will clear 2 weeks ago when it voted to implement remote voting by proxy and other necessary measures to ensure that Congress can continue to protect lives and livelihoods. The House's position that remote voting by proxy during a pandemic is fully consistent with the Constitution is supported by expert legal analysis. Wow. The House made its will clear, she says. No, the Democrats made their will clear. The Democrats are not all of the House. Not at all. Not at all. They represent just over half of the House. And that remote voting by proxy is fully consistent with the Constitution, being supported by expert legal analysis. Exactly what expert legal analysis might that be? It would be progressive expert legal analysis, which twists the words of law to mean whatever they want it to mean. As Washington, D.C. is still considered a hotspot under stay-at-home orders, the House resumed for a brief two-day session this week to consider FISA reforms, condemn human rights violations against ethnic Turkic Muslims in China, known as Uyghurs, and vote on small business coronavirus legislation and other bills. Meanwhile, lawmakers were scrambling on a new FISA plan as Republicans suddenly withdrew their support. Republicans have rejected the proxy vote option and showed up to Washington arguing that members of Congress are essential workers. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California, yesterday morning, said, "For 231 years, we have seen a proxy vote. We have never seen a proxy vote on the floor of the House. We look at the history of America through the yellow fever of 1793, the Civil War, the burning of this Capitol during the War of 1812, the Spanish flu of 1918, and even 9/11. Congress has never flinched from its constitutional duty to uphold and assemble inside this body." Think about that. 9/11, for one example. We had just had foreign entities hijack airliners and fly them into buildings in downtown New York, into the Pentagon. And another was on its way to the White House. Think if there had been one more pointed towards the House and the Senate. Think. And they still showed up for work. They still did their job. Under that terroristic threat, they still did their jobs. When it wasn't just the general population, but it was Washington, D.C. that was the target. They still showed up for work. But right now, for a virus that's killing 0.26% of the people of the United States of America, 0.25%, 0.25%, they won't show up. Because they say they're preventing the spread of the virus. If it wasn't so egregious, it would be laughable. Now, other countries have adopted rule changes during the coronavirus pandemic to allow for some remote and virtual proceedings, such as Canada, Brazil, and the European Union. The British House of Commons broke 700 years of history last month by convening Parliament with Zoom. Other aspects of the U.S. government have already changed. The Supreme Court is now holding oral arguments via telephone conference. The U.S. Senate on May 12th held a hybrid video conference hearing where the chairman and witnesses were zoomed into the room from their homes, including Dr. Anthony Fauci. The House's remote voting plan allows for absent members to cast votes by proxy for 45 days. One member can vote proxy on behalf of up to 10 colleagues. The special provisions can be renewed for the remainder of the congressional term that ends in January. This is nothing more than political theater. That's all it is. It's political theater. They are trying to create an image of crisis which doesn't truly exist. Just like Joe Biden and his wife parading out in public for the first time in a long time, wearing black face masks. It was political theater. They were virtue signaling. And that's what the Democrats in the House of Representatives are doing now. They are virtue signaling, telling the people We care about you. So to prevent the spread of the virus, we're going to stay home and not gather together and spread the virus. It's virtue signaling. Political theater. It's meaningless. So don't be deceived by it. Hey, that's going to do it for today. I hope you have a good day wherever you are, whenever you're listening. Get out there and get it done, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.